It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, America.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Here we go, off and running for a brand new month, the last full month of summer. Here it is, August, the month that heretofore was known in the rest of the world, or in the rest of the Latin-speaking world in those days, as Sextilis. No, it didn't mean it was the sexy month, it meant it was the sixth month. Sextilis, but in honor of Octavian, whom we know as Augustus Caesar. Well, or Caesar Augustus, from whom we get the term Geezer Disgustus for the current occupant of 1600 Black Lives Matter Plaza. Well, this was his birth month. And it is. It's the last full month of summer. Because 20 or so days into September, it becomes autumn. And the time of frozen misery approaches. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, little ray of sunshine. But anyway, we've got a brand new month, and we'll be working to make sure there's a program in September. And the first broadcast of every month begins with Bruce's Memorial Challenge, courtesy of our buddy Gary, Laborman, and Ralph's, and an anonymous friend. So there's $200 in matching monies on the table. And if we can come up with $200 tonight, then that'll get doubled. So it turns into $400 thanks to the matching challenge. Thank you to Laborman and Ralph's and our anonymous friend in that regard. New month, summer's coming to a close. And it was a lovely weekend. I was reminded on Saturday when I was out in the yard and the clouds skating past and the sun intermittently peeking out from behind them. I was reminded of Kurt Vonnegut Jr.'s admonition to us all that in such moments, we should take time to step back and simply say, if this isn't nice, I don't know what is. Because it's true. We are in the middle of a pandemic. The United States is getting it worse than any other country in the world because we are in the throes or in the grips of bioterrorists and incompetence. Generally known as maggots, Republicans. And so we can't go out and be in our social groups the way that we'd like to because we have functioning brains. So we're trying to make sure that we are not responsible for spreading the disease. And so it can get a little stressful. There's a story out there. Oh, and every program here at the Horn begins with gratitude. So thanks go out to our first, second, and third of the month subscribers. Thanks very kindly to Stephen and Gene and Ann. Thank you very kindly indeed to Monty and to Rocco. Thank you to Rusty. And thank you to Shorty in L.A. Thank you to Terry in Amherst, where only the H is silent. And thanks to Tom in sunny San Rafael. Thank you one and all for being partial sponsors of the program. No, it's as I was saying, it's stressful out there. I saw one story earlier today to the effect that parents who are having to school their kids at home they're drinking a lot more. A research question found that parents stressed by having to school their kids during the pandemic drink 7 more drinks per month than parents who do not report feeling stressed by distance learning. Huh. And this is also, there's also binge drinking. And it was a survey of 361 with parents with children under 18 years of age. It was done in May. And so but people are definitely stressing out. But, you try to make your pleasures where you can find them. And if you follow me on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, we had the maiden voyage of the Paella Pan this weekend. I've been talking about it and talking about it and talking about it. And I did it. And damn, was it good. Did some roasted oysters on the grill with butter and Creole seasoning. Agnes roared through a dozen of those with no problem at all. And the paella was delicious. It was, for my first effort, it was okay. It will get better, though. And so it was just, Saturday was a beautiful, wonderful, lovely day. And I also got to thinking about something. After we'd emptied out the paella pan and everything, Agnes said, well, you cooked it, I'll go clean it. And she washed out the paella pan and handed it to me, and I went and hung it up, and then something dawned on me. Damn, this looks an awful lot like a deep dish pizza pan. So I looked up a good deep Chicago-style deep dish pizza dough recipe, and I think that's going to happen, and it fits perfectly inside the acorn, this pan does. Another inch in diameter, and it would not fit. So I got it right. Yay. But we really do need to take time to look up now and then and say, if this isn't nice, I don't know what is. Because there are so many people around the world, but particularly in this country, who are not able to do things like that. News coming out of what is described as the cultural capital of Australia, Melbourne, where they're going into a double secret probation super duper lockdown because, Victoria, where Melbourne is the state capital, they have 12,000 of Australia's roughly 18,000 cases of COVID-19. Yeah, take a moment with that. Australia has 18,000 cases. 12,000 of them are in Victoria, most of those in Melbourne. And they're shutting the hell down. I mean, they're going to lock down tight because that's what you have to do to beat this thing. A story out of Agence France-Presse recounts the reaction of Catherine Reed, a 32-year-old woman who lives alone. She's been working at home since March. Of course, it is winter turning, moving toward spring up over Down Under. And when she heard the news of the coming lockdown, she wept. She broke into tears. She said, "I understand the increased lockdown, cruel and misguided rules, but said the rules are cruel and misguided that allow partners but not friends to visit. But of course, these are things that have to be done if we want the disease to go away." Yeah, which means, in short, that it's safe to say that Corona Caligula and Mike Pencil Neck Geek and the rest of that sorry, filthy bioterrorist lot don't want it to go away. And business owners, at least around here, you know, we've had the videos out of, for the most part, California, where people are, where businesses are enforcing their masking order, and that causes, well, the Karens and their associates to lose their collective shit and holler about, you know the usual drill, the drivel, the but my rights and but the ADA and but HIPAA and but OSHA. It's in the Constitution. But the bottom line is businesses can do this. Especially with a mandate in place. Well, it seems that California is trying harder than most. Of course, they have the most cases now. Y'all do. But here, in almost level West by Cold Trump Virginia-stan, where cases are on the rise? No. So while places like the state of Victoria in Australia, curfews will be coming, non-essential businesses will be closed, Melbourne will be transformed into a ghost town, people are described as demoralized, there's an hour-long window for exercise in which people can go outside. Everything else is shut down. The theaters, the live music venues, the restaurants of the city. I remember Tony Bourdain did an episode there and talked about how it is Melbourne is the epicenter of the Australian culinary world. Foot traffic completely gone, and the Prime Minister, the Premier of Victoria, Daniel Andrews, noting that Victoria may be years to recover. But not because of the shutdown, because of the damned virus. Now, on the other hand, here, of course, we've said that the economy is more important than people's lives. And that's why we have north of 150,000 dead people in this country. But we also have an economy in recession. The gross domestic product dropped harder in the last quarter and further in the last quarter than in any other time in American history. And here, again, in almost level West by Cold Trump Virginia-stan, we have a mask mandate that virtually no one is following. I made a trip to the local Dairy Queen yesterday, and it's over by one of the motels. And so I looped, just out of an abiding sense of curiosity, I looped around, and lo and behold, there, at the picnic area by the pool of this local motel, was a whole group of people, likely out-of-towners and out-of-staters. And, I mean, they were gathered under that little roof there in the picnic area, and they were LARPing and smolicking and wallering and lollygagging and spewing and spraying and hooting and hollering and carrying on. 30, 40 more. Not a mask among them. And no social distance worth a fuck. And so, however much time they stayed here, there is an extreme likelihood that they spread the disease. And then they went back home. God almighty, this weekend I saw license plates from Oklahoma and North Dakota. Come all the way here. Because they think we ain't got it so bad. Looky there, Marvelline. They're just yeller, not gold or red. Like we are. So we can't lock down. We can't shut down. And instead, there is no end in sight for what is coming at us and what is already here. So when those nice little moments come around, take Kurt Vonnegut's advice. Take a moment to say, if this isn't nice, I don't know what is. Steve in New York writing, saying, I have to say this. I was disappointed at some of my fellow New Yorkers, a LARPing, smolicking, and breathifying without masks on Saturday. However, I have to give a shout-out to some today. I was on the subway at about 8:30 a.m. There are six large benches on a subway. Some had three or four people per bench for a few stops. And you know what? Everyone, yes, everyone out of 25 to 30 people were wearing masks, nose and all. And you know what? I didn't suffocate or pass out. I didn't need to invoke the HIPAA, the ADA, or the OSHA. Well, that's because, Steve, you're an intelligent person, and you seem to have been on the subway with other intelligent people. If only. If only. And, you know, here with school starting back in other states, I think there will probably be a press of people coming here to get that last, wring out those last few moments of vacation pleasure. And, of course, as discussed, this past weekend was also three super spreader events here in my county, sponsored by the Fayette County Board of Education, in which they invited proud parents, grandparents, friends, aunts, uncles, nieces, cousins, relatives of various degree, neighbors, friends, etc., to come on down to the high school ball field and watch them young scholars matriculate, whilst at the same time LARPing and smolicking and lollygagging and wallering and spewing and praying and singing and shouting and hollering and, yeah. And, of course, no one was turned away. And no one was told they had to wear a mask. God damn it. It's kind of like being in a horror movie where the bad thing can't be stopped, and you know it's getting closer and closer, and the calls are coming from inside the house. What do you do? Well, on Saturday, I got back to the house and stayed outside and played and cooked and carried on and generally enjoyed life. Because when you got people out there trying to kill you, and let's understand, that's what, if you won't wear a mask and if you won't practice social distancing, and if you're hooting and hollering and larping and smollicking and lollygagging and wallering, you are a bioterrorist actively engaged in trying to kill innocent people. And there's no middle ground. Flavio says, yesterday was the first day of Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers' mask mandate. I took the bus to the grocery store. Everyone was wearing a mask, if by wearing you mean using it as a chin strap, leaving the mouth and nose uncovered, or leaving the nose uncovered. Some of the bus drivers were telling people to pull up their masks, but others weren't. And the Republicans are ready to challenge Evers' mask mandate. We're so fucked. Yeah, and it's infuriating, isn't it, Flavio? And really, there's a good functional comparison to having one's mask down below one's nose. I mean, sure, you could look at the people who do that with their schnoz hanging over the top edge of the mask and say, if you were going to have surgery and you found out that your surgeon was going to wear her mask that way, would you have that surgeon do your surgery? Because every time they exhale, they're potentially sending pathogens into the open wound in your body to make it harder for you to heal and recover from the surgery. Would you hire that surgeon? You can do it that way. The other image, though, and oddly enough, there are two examples to refer to with this. The other image is that of a man with his fly open and his schmeckle hanging out over the waistband of his BVDs. Because at that point in time, the BVDs are not serving as genital coverings. They're just there sort of for, I suppose, decorative purposes. And what do I mean when I say that there are examples? Ralphs and others have sent this along. It has to do with Jerry Falwell Jr., who is, without a doubt, one of the worst human beings in America. By a long shot. He posted this weekend or in the last 24 hours or so, he posted a photograph that he said was of him on a yacht. And said it was a vacation photo. His Instagram post, the caption said, "More vacation shots. Lots of good friends visited us on the yacht. I promise that's just black water in my glass. It was a prop only." It really appears to be a glass of red wine or Jack and Coke or I don't know. The interesting thing, though, is that he looks really skeevy, but he always does. And he has his pants unbuttoned and his fly unzipped showing a portion of whatever it is that he wears for underwear. And he's got his shirt pulled up, kind of rolled up in front, to display his flabby pink gut. But wait, there's more. Because he has his arm around a redheaded woman who also has her shirt pulled up to expose her belly and also has her short shorts, which are torn, as is the fashion these days, unbuttoned and unzipped. That is not Mrs. Falwell. Oh, no. It is most assuredly not Mrs. Falwell. Relevant Magazine found the photo first, apparently, or made the world aware of it. And, yes, she's described as a friend. Friend. And that's all. There was another picture of him glaring and frowning at the camera, at which he says, about which he says, "Fun vacation." It was disturbing enough that a feller at the Falkirk Foundation, which is a wingnut welfare shop that is run and controlled by Jerry Falwell Jr. He founded it in connection or in concert with Turning Point USA, you know, TP USA, Toilet Paper USA, and their founder, Charlie Kirk. Well, the feller, Malachi O'Brien, said, "Oh, this is not President Falwell." A little bit later, he deleted his tweet and then posted, "Yeah, that's Jerry." But then, because Moran, and because this is Moran Monday, Malachi Feller, Falkirk Center Feller Malachi O'Brien said, "This photograph was taken out of context of the other photos with it." Do tell. Kind of hard for a photo to be taken out of context when it was posted by the person who's in the photo, isn't it? Or is that just me? Falkirk Center Feller Malachi O'Brien then said, "What it was being used to imply is ungodly and seems to have been posted out of context for that reason." Jerry Falwell posted it! You know, Jerry Falwell Jr., the guy who put his pool boy into business and made remarks about his wife, Becky, and posted some, well, supposedly, according to the reports, unflattering photos of her. Or at least, okay, how about not safe for work photos of her? It's been a busy weekend. And so, hence my reference to masks, noses, unzipped flies, that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Or then there's the guy in Florida, and this is, I don't think I'm going to share the audio, but the guy in Florida, who also had his pants unzipped and was screaming, "Fuck this and fuck that and MAGA, 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 MAGA." All right. Until a woman says to him, there are children present. Knock it off. At which point, this guy can be seen going straightway to the woman and slapping her so hard her head flies and she falls to the ground. Of course, being Florida, there was no social distancing going on or anything like that. The woman he slapped was wearing a mask. And then a bunch of other guys jumped on him. And one of them eventually choked him out. Now, I left out a detail. The guy that was screaming, "If you don't know Donald Trump, fuck you, MAGA." Well, he had white supremacist tattoos all over him. And not just, you know, here and there. One, he had a great goddamn big swastika tattooed on his hide. He was charged with assault and admitted to bail in the amount of $620. Now, again, he was behaving in this way in front of children, in public, and hit a woman so hard she will probably, if it has not already been diagnosed, will eventually be diagnosed with a closed head injury, a concussion. There's no way she didn't. $620 bail for a Nazi. Who could have killed a woman with a blow that hard. Kind of makes you wonder about the judge who admitted him to bail. Doesn't it? I guess the only thing that could have made things more obvious would be if he, or she, don't know about the judge, had made the bail $88 or $880 instead of $620. How do you do that? Where was the prosecutor's office? We don't have a good answer for that. No, we certainly don't. Let's see, back to the mailbag. Oh, thank you. Thank you, Jeremy, for getting us started on the challenge. Thank you very kindly. Hopefully, in short order, you will have some company. Steve in New York says, sounds like someone actually is a fucking nihilist in response to old Jerry Jr. And as to the woman who is not his lawfully wedded, good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian wife, James in Illinois says, of the redhead, don't tell me, let me guess, she's a prop too? Yes, and taken completely out of context. Apparently the suite where they were being friends was named the Context Suite. As to the black water, would you drink black water, Ralphs asks. And refers to a alkaline fulvic trace mineral infused water called BLK. I don't think that's what, yeah. Well, maybe it is. And so, as noted, Steve in New York says, I was hoping the black water was hemlock. Perchance to dream. Indeed. This coming from Joey. Yesterday was August 2nd. This date always stands out in my mind because there were two significant plane crashes on that day in history. One in 1979, the other in 1985. The one in 85 was a United Lockheed L-1011 TriStar that encountered wind shear while trying to land at DFW in Dallas. The plane crash killed 137 people, including a passenger in a car traveling on a nearby highway close to the airport, killing the driver, who was on the way to attending a birthday party. The other crash, Joey says, really hit home to me because that summer of 79 I was dating, ironically, a girl named Karen, and she lived on the northwest side of Canton, not far from a rather famous professional athlete. In fact, when heading over to Karen's place, I would pass Thurman Munson's home to get to her house. As I was leaving that Thursday afternoon to go see my girlfriend, my father yelled to me that something was scrolling across the bottom of the TV screen about Thurman Munson. I thought, sure, the announcement was going to be the trade of Munson to the Cleveland Indians, considering Munson very much wanted to play close to home so he could spend more time with his family. Munson took up flying just for the specific purpose of being able to fly back home to Canton on off days. I can still remember me yelling to my father, was he traded? And my father responding in shocked disbelief. No, he was killed in a plane crash at Akron Canton Airport. Needless to say, I will never forget the August the 2nd, ever. Munson was flying a twin-engine jet plane that he didn't have adequate flight experience to be piloting by himself. However, he wanted to cut down on his time in the air, and with his Cessna Citation turboprop jet instead of his previously owned single-prop plane, he could virtually cut the three-hour trip from New York City via New Jersey's Teterboro Airport down to nearly 1 hour in the air. Munson's wife would win a substantial lawsuit against Cessna, citing the fact that the Cessna Corporation pressured and enabled her husband to purchase a plane he was too inexperienced to pilot. Normally, Joey observes, planes don't crash if conditions are reasonable and those piloting the plane have adequate, proper training and experience. For that matter, neither do economies the caliber of the United States crash unless, of course, you have an incompetent idiot at the helm. As a pilot and a bunch of right-wing fascist Republicans in the Senate enabling this idiot to crash the economy by not impeaching him. We just lost one-third of gross domestic product last quarter with absolutely nothing to show for it in terms of stopping the spike of the coronavirus. And if the Republicans are not willing to soon pass a similar stimulus plan, plain and simple, this economy will crash and spiral into full-blown depression. Thurman Munson endeavored to be a pilot so he could be nearer to home and closer to his family. Unfortunately, too many in this country will be much closer and nearer to their families than they may wish to be, as they will have nowhere else to go if the eviction moratorium is not reinstated. Couple this with the fact that the coronavirus is soaring, and millions of people will be forced into overcrowded living conditions while living with friends and relatives. Look out below. A major crash is looming. And I will add editorially, we're all the guy on the highway on the way to the birthday party. This has been Joey's Journal for Monday, the third day of August, with Giraffrey hoping we can land the plane on November 3rd and land a new pilot to lead this country. Devoutly to be wished, Joey. Just before airtime, I got another one of my wingnut emails because I do. I'm looking for the wingnut in question. There it is. Coming from Chris Walker, Regional Communications Director of the Republican National Committee. The little disclosure box at the bottom says the Republican National Committee paid for this email to be sent to me. Managing the economy has never been Joe Biden's strong suit. Well, considering that Donald Trump just corkscrewed the economy into the earth, what is and is not a strong suit is certainly open for discussion. The stimulus program that Biden oversaw failed to spur a strong comeback, leading to stagnant wage growth and the slowest economic recovery since World War II. Reimagining the economy is an unlikely task for Joe Biden, who is not known for his economic expertise. I don't know how anybody typed this without laughing uproariously. So it shouldn't be surprising to see that Biden's latest tax plan would slow growth and kill American jobs. You know, kill an American is a kill, and the word kill and the word American are those are two words that should probably not ever be used ever again by anyone working for Donald Trump. But apparently that message hasn't gotten through to Chris Walker, Regional Communications Director of the Republican National Committee. No, because the guy he wants to see elected, not reelected, he was never elected in the first place. The guy he wants to see elected has, he didn't kill 150,000 American jobs. Well, actually, he wiped out millions of American jobs. But he's killed 150,000 plus Americans. Yeah. So we definitely have a moron nomination for Chris Walker, Regional Communications Director of the Republican National Committee, and his idiot email. Oh, yes. Yeah, as Flavio noted, we could have saved the Jerry Falwell photo for prayer meeting Wednesday, but like Flavio, I agree that the early submission was warranted. And similarly, on Friday on the front porch, we discussed the LARPing and Wallering and Smolicking and Grabulating and Singing Festival there at the Sundial Bridge in Redding, California. And Sparky tells me that he told his sister in Tennessee about it and then did some more digging. From this story from anewscafe.com. Yesterday was the one-week anniversary of Bethel Church member Sean Fucht, F-E-U-C-H-T apostrophe S, I think Fucht's. Sean Fucht's controversial worship concert at the Sundial Bridge in Redding. Once again, incredulous outsiders are left to wonder what's in Shasta County's water to cause our residents to behave so recklessly in the face of the deadly novel coronavirus. First came May 10th, Mother's Day Cottonwood Rodeo that got the A-OK giddy up by unbelievable Sheriff Eric McGreeny, the county's top gun with the oxymoron of a law enforcement title, because he refuses to enforce pandemic-related public health orders. And then at the Sundial Bridge in Redding, thousands of fundamentalist Christians crammed, jammed, and sang together in defiance of public health orders that especially ban large gatherings during the pandemic. Social distancing was non-existent by participants at the Sundial Bridge, and the number of people spotted wearing masks could be counted on two hands. And it was all part of Fucked's Let Us Worship Gala. And among other things, they hooted and they hollered and they shouted, Jesus! Because Sean Fucked is some sort of a musician. And uses the phrase, no Jesus, K-N-O-W, Jesus, no mask, N-O mask. And he ran a big old scam to make that, to create that super spreader event in Reading. But he was in San Bernardino, and it turns out Sean Fucked is going around the country everywhere he can trying to get the pandemic really rocking. Friday night, he was in Siloam Springs, Arkansas. Saturday, Tulsa, Oklahoma. Yesterday, San Marcos, Texas. This Saturday, he'll be in Seattle. August 23rd, he'll be in Los Angeles. August 30th, he'll be in Boston. And this is all out of order. August 8th, he'll be in Portland. August 21st, San Diego. August 29th, New York City. And September 6th, at the Capitol Building in Sacramento, California. And you've got to... Is there not a single governor anywhere in the country... Or anywhere in these places where Sean Fucked is going to have fucked over people trying to survive a plague? Is there not a single governor who will move quickly and decisively to shut this wicked shit down? Yeah, how about the governor of Massachusetts? I mean, he's a Republican, but he's been fairly serious about the pandemic. New York City? Hello? Governor Cuomo? Has anybody told Governor Cuomo that this fucker who does super spreader events on purpose is coming his way? How about Seattle? Where they have one of the more competent governors in the country. Has anybody told him? Does Jay Inslee know that there's a super spreader coming to try to get the plague going even worse in Washington State? I don't know. Maybe some emails to folks like that. I mean, how about Oregon's governor, Kate Brown? How about Gavin Newsom, San Diego? So you've got a sheriff who won't enforce the law. Fucked. Send in the National Guard. State police, but stop this shit. I mean, it was frustrating as hell for me to see that gang of LARPing and smollicking and wallering and grabulating and lollygagging COVIDiots just under a picnic roof yesterday. But this is hundreds, if not thousands, of people. You know, one of the reasons that New Orleans was among the earliest cities to get so badly burned by the Rona was because they didn't realize fully what was coming at them, and so they went ahead and had Mardi Gras as normal. to the extent that Mardi Gras can ever be referred to as normal. You could not pay me to go to Mardi Gras. Because, under the best of circumstances, it's a hot mess. But seriously, Jay Inslee, Kate Brown, Gavin Newsom, Andrew Cuomo, any of y'all, shut this fucker down. Los Angeles County, California is on fucking fire. And this stupid bastard is going to have one of his no Jesus, no masks super spreader events in L.A. on the 23rd of this month. So there's plenty of time to act. Now, you know, it's ridiculous to think that Asa Hutchinson or Greg Abbott or that COVIDiot who's actually got the Rona, governor of Oklahoma, would do anything to stop this, because they're the bioterrorists who are trying to keep it, to get it going, trying to send it roaring back into those Yankee states so they can kill off blue state Democrats in hopes of stealing the election in November. Jude said, I just tuned in. Who's the person coming to those states? His name, Jude, is Sean F-E-U-C-H-T. Fucked, fucked, I don't know. And he's a musician and a gospel sharp. And he's taking his super spreader events all over the country because he doesn't think it's real. Then again, he thinks that dead corpses coming back to life and young girls who've never had sex having babies, he thinks those things are real. But he says Jesus will protect you from the Rona. Sean Fucht, F-E-U-C-H-T. And he's, you know, we've talked about him in the past. He has a history. And by that, I mean, I think I mentioned him this past Wednesday's prayer meeting. Oh, where is it? Because he was crying the big paranoia. Of course, you know, screaming and hooting that this was the lockdowns and limitations are solely for the purpose of persecuting Christians. And he's got this long, lanky, blonde hair and a scruffy little beard. You know, sort of got that whole white boy Jesus thing going on. And what, it was back in mid-July when he said, "What a tyrannical move and drastic overreach of government into our religious liberties. Silencing the church seems to be one of his main agendas. This is insane. What a tyrannical overreach of the government. What an infringement on our Constitution and our free liberty to worship God. We are standing up. This is insane." And he comes out of a megachurch in Northern California called Bethel. And he's a bioterrorist. So thanks for the background, the backgrounder there, Sparky. Much obliged. Jack in Shreveport, religious unmaskery. I keep hearing the religious types saying something like, wearing the mask separates you from God. You know where that comes from? Is there some scripture or something to point to? No! No, most of evangelical Christian doctrine isn't even doctrine to begin with. Just like the millennialism, premillennialism, postmillennialism, the end times horseshit. It is made of whole cloth by theologians of the last 200 or 300 years. And even if you could cite a Bible verse saying not to wear a mask, you would be citing a verse from a book written by people who didn't understand why it rains, let alone germ theory. So there's that. James in Illinois. Bust Sean fucked. Bust his ass. Let him cool his heels. Hear, hear. And you need a judge who will put a sufficient bail on him to make sure that he stays right there. And, you know, he could do some, the Matthew 23 work? He could visit the people in prison? Yeah? Because, folks in prison need some visiting and some ministering. I had a note over the weekend from our buddy Tom in sunny San Rafael. Moran Monday nomination. Tom wrote, here's an article about a friend of ours who is probably going to die of COVID. The top dogs in the California prison system. Fucking morons. Morans. And he's talking about a story out of the Mercury News, headline, Catastrophe, How California's Worst Coronavirus Outbreak Burst from San Quentin into their home in San Jose. Veteran prison guard who brought home deadly virus infecting his family, now in fight for his life. 55-year-old Sergeant Gilbert Polanco drove an hour and a half home to San Jose. Every day he'd take off his khaki uniform in the foyer and head straight to the shower. And we've had descriptions of that kind of behavior and how careful people are coming, for instance, from Matt in San Francisco, who talks about the same thing. You entering the house, stripping down, everything goes in the washing machine while he and his beloved go first to the showers, get cleaned off, and make sure that they are being as safe as they possibly can. Well, Gilbert Polanco was doing the same thing. As they write in the San Jose Mercury News, he was desperately trying not to bring the killer coronavirus home from California's death row. His wife, Patricia, so worried these days she could barely sleep, tossed his clothes into the quick wash cycle each night, no matter the hour, on hot, with a splash of vinegar. He would say, I'm scared. It's growing. She said of the virus that was spreading through the notorious 168-year-old prison. We're doing everything to keep it contained, but it's impossible. By June, Sergeant Gilbert Polanco came home sick. And in a matter of days, he had infected both his wife, Patricia, and their 22-year-old daughter, Selena, extending the reach of a tragedy that had started a month earlier with a colossal mistake by prison officials, an inmate transfer that would unleash the deadly virus on a destructive path through at least five California prisons that spanned the state, exploding in San Quentin into what may be the largest outbreak anywhere in the United States. It was a 5-bus caravan from a state prison in Southern California down in Chino. And it may as well have been a 5-bus caravan of death. In less than 2 months, 19 inmates have died, 8 of them on death row. The infected prisoner number for San Quentin alone is 2,181. 258 prison guards and other staff have gotten it too. Patricia Polanco and her daughter have each recovered. But more than a month after coming home sick, Gilbert Polanco is so ill that doctors at Kaiser San Jose Hospital have twice called to say he might not make it through the night. As the San Jose Mercury News article describes it, he is breathing on a ventilator and lying prone to relieve the pressure on his lungs. That's putting it mildly. He is horizontally crucified. He has 18 inches of garden hose down his throat. He is in a chemical coma. He is restrained so that he can't remove the hose because it is such a hateful thing to have in you. He cannot see. He cannot speak. He can feel, and he can hear. His wife, Patricia, says, why would they let this happen? If they were doing their job, they would have known this would be dangerous. Sergeant Polanco has worked at San Quentin since he was 21 years old. And I mention all of this because Tom in sunny San Rafael writes, my son and Gilbert's son went to the same preschool, and we've been friends ever since. We've been following Gilbert's, I was going to say progress, but really it's decline, ever since we learned about it a month ago. He's been in ICU since July 3rd, such a nice guy, even the prisoners like him. Last I checked, Tom continues, there were almost 2,200 infections at San Quentin. Hard to see how there wouldn't be. I've seen inside of one of the cell blocks. Not a single case before they transferred prisoners in. Tom, recalling what I was talking about last week, said, I hope your local high school graduation doesn't turn into the same thing. Stay safe, avoid groups, and avoid cell blocks. Signed, Tom, in sunny San Rafael. Although it doesn't seem so sunny just now, although the weather is beautiful. But of course, if you're a maggot or some sort of law and order type, you don't really care if it burns through the prison system, and it's burning through prisons all over this country. Why do you not care? Well, because it's them. Prison ain't supposed to be fun. It ain't supposed to be nice. And if they die, well, God's will. And apparently that extends to the guards and the support staff. Well, they'll just go on to heaven. I know. Kyle's back. Kyle, glad to hear from you again. Jesus fucking Christ, Kyle says, what the hell is wrong with this country? Well, I think it could be a list much easier to compile to ask what's right with it right now. It's a lot shorter list. Billable Rick says, Bob, to paraphrase Scotty, Bob, we're all fuked. Okay. We're all fuked, Bob. It feels that way. And speaking of Scott, what the Bible says about being subject to civil authorities, 1 Peter 2:13 through 15. Submit yourselves for the Lord's sake to every human institution, whether to a king as the one in authority or to governors as sent by him for the punishment of evildoers and the praise of those who do right. For such is the will of God, that by doing right you may silence the ignorance of foolish men. Well, that's just another set of those verses that the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexuals don't know is in there. Yeah. Oh, and back when I was talking about Regional Communications Director Chris Walker of the Republican National Committee, Jack in Shreveport said, Chris Walker, idiot. Biden's stimulus didn't work. It's the Republicans who always balk at spending enough to make a stimulus really work properly. They sabotage it every time because, they're cut purses, foot pads, sneak thieves, highwaymen, bandits, and they have to steal. It's all that they do and all that they are. Yeah. So we have moved into the second hour of the program, and we need to raise $195 to knock out the fundraising goal and match the efforts of Laborman and our anonymous friend and Ralphs in putting forward Bruce's Memorial Challenge. I hope that can happen. What else is out there? Well, David in South Carolina Stan says, grifters got a grift. The United States has agreed to pay Sanofi and GSK, GlaxoSmithKline, $2.1 billion for 100 million doses of coronavirus vaccine. Trump just happens to own a significant stake in Sanofi through mutual funds Dodge and Cox. They also make hydroxychloroquine. Is there ever enough? That from Zev Shalev. No, there's never enough. And in point of fact, according to a Washington Post column by Greg Sargent today, scientists, researchers are warning in interviews with the New York Times that the October surprise will, as predicted here on this program previously, because we live in the future here, the October surprise will be an announcement by Donald J. Trump, the J stands for grifter, that a vaccine has been achieved. And the researchers interviewed by the New York Times say that is exactly what they expect. Either Nitwit Nero will like and announce a vaccine that isn't ready, or he'll rush the process to ensure a vaccine is ready, whether it is or not. No, we got trouble in River City. And by the way, David, that's a mighty fine drive-by trucker's mask you're sporting there, my friend. But we talked about this a good while back. And according to the New York Times, experts inside and outside the government are afraid that the White House will push the Food and Drug Administration to overlook insufficient data and give at least limited emergency approval to a vaccine, perhaps for use by specific groups like frontline healthcare workers, before the election takes place on November 3rd. Because, of course. Back at the Post, Greg Sargent wrote, "It is the perfect Trumpian paradox that his long record of just this sort of corruption underscores why this scenario should be entertained with deadly seriousness, but also why it will likely fail." And people working on the inside on the vaccine are very nervous, that's a quote, about what will what'll happen. David in South Carolina, Stan, reminds us, Vlad, you know, huggable, snuggleable, cuddleable, lovable, Vlad Pooty, just announced that Mother Russia will have a vaccine ready in October. Well, bust my buttons. Who could have seen that coming? And we'll gladly share technology with American President Donald Trump, who is greatest of American presidents. Believe me, we have never owned a better president than Donald Trump. And you know it's true. Prison Rona Jack in Shreveport says, "The punishment fetishists' bigots get a bonus by allowing the virus to run rampant in prisons. Since the prison population is so overrepresented by black people in the first place, it automatically targets them simply by not taking measures to mitigate the virus." That's exactly what bioterrorists do. And all we can do is try to stay safe. But it is More In Monday. And of course, More In Monday, well, we can at least, yeah.
"You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons."
And so that introduces the Alex Jones portion of the program. It was this past Wednesday when he went back to one of his favorite topics, the so-called New World Order. Oh, dear. Okay, Kid Mark says, F-E-U-C-H-T, foiked. Foiked. That makes sense. Foiked. Although, under the circumstances, I think it's probably still appropriate to refer to him as fucked. Because it's certainly what he's trying to do to American citizens. Foiked. But Alex Jones. He was sitting at a news desk there at InfoWars and had set pieces of military-style rifles. And he told the mouth-walking knuckle-breathers that he, Alex Jones, had confirmed that Maoists have explosives and weapons and trucks loaded with ammonium nitrate and just chlorine gas, everything. And they're going to murder right-wing talk show hosts. And then, because, of course, Alex Jones is a man of peace, he said, "I want to avoid confrontation.
I don't need to put that on my belt. That I mean, I don't even want to kill these globalists. But if they want to kill us, the best thing to do in a defensive way is kill as many of them as quickly as possible. Again, the media will misquote that. I don't want to offensively kill anybody, but I'm not going to take this, okay? So everybody needs to start making a list, just like Santa Claus. And just think about the future. If they take down your country, if they destroy your bank account, they murder a bunch of patriot leaders, what are you going to do? Because you always talked about when the New World Order came in, and when the UN did this, you were going to go out and shoot folks in blue helmets. They don't wear blue helmets. They show up in black uniforms and burn down your local courthouse and overthrow your government, ruin your life. And once they get control of your police, those officers are programmed robots now. They'll follow orders to come after you. Now, I don't want you to have a civil war with the cops, even if they're captured and cowards and bad people, some of them. What you got to do is make war against the establishment perverts and the pedophiles that run it. If you're running a war, you kill high-value targets, and that means the leadership of the New World Order. Yeah, those black uniforms, he of course, is talking about the massive brigades of Antifa soldiers who exist entirely in the fetid, maundering fantasies of what passes for Alex Jones's mind. I don't say that to act tough. As men, we have to decide we're dead already. It's easy. You'll never be freer to the point you're ready to die. Just get over it. It's not a big deal. The enemy's not the loser meth head playing video games that is told by the media and given $100 a day to go out and do this. They're not the target. You do nothing killing them, and I don't want you to kill anybody right now. Yeah, it's the right now part that makes it seditious. But I want you to understand where they've taken us and what they've done, and that every single globalist New World Order operative at an executive level is an enemy combatant of humanity. Now is not the time. You'll know the time. Yeah. They're itching. They're just itching. Meanwhile, a reminder, the organization that has spent the last generation plus telling us that we all needed to have guns in case it came to that point in time where the government was putting its jackbooted jackboots down on our freedom-loving necks right next to the tattoo where it says, only God can judge me. Well, they started doing that, you know, of course, in Portland. And the National Ruble Association was nowhere to be seen. It, what? Us? Oh, we're just a peace-loving organization dedicated to shooting sports and handgun safety. Here, can I introduce you to Eddie Eagle? Yeah, he's next to Bobby Beagle. Maoists? Maoists? Says Ron in Raleigh. Did I inadvertently step into a time warp? Is it 1963? Getting close. Yeah, Maoist. And fucking nihilist, too, right? And as Sparky reminds me, it's not just Sean Foyt who's hosting Super Spreader events. Super Spreadin' is coming to South Dakota. Because Kristi Noem, the governor of that state, is totally down with the Sturgis motorcycle rally that begins this Friday. About 7,000 people in Sturgis, but there in western South Dakota, annually they host the motorcycle rally. This will be the 80th. There should be about 250,000 people there. It'll last for 10 days. It's drawn as many as 600,000 people.
and cases are already on the rise. God, hold on here. I wonder if that Georgia Tech COVID tool even encompasses a number that big. Nope, the most you can get is 10,000. And so there's South Dakota. Let's find out what county Sturgis is in. It's in Meade County. Oh, yeah, there it is. Meade County, South Dakota. With just 10,000 people there at an event, there is a greater than 99% likelihood that the Rona will be there, too. And it'll spread. Because, of course, anyone stupid enough to attend the Sturgis Bike Week will be so stupid they also will not wear masks or social distance. Because morons. Residents of Sturgis are not particularly of one mind about this. Now, they're expecting maybe 125,000 just because of the situation as it is. I'm sure, being sparsely populated, Meade County doesn't have just a shit ton of ICU beds. And, of course, South Dakota is home to numerous Native American tribes. Various tribes are at presently in conflict with Governor Kristi Noem. Maggot. Sturgis resident Linnell Chapman, speaking at a city council meeting in June, said, "This is a huge, foolish mistake to make to host the rally this year. The government of Sturgis needs to care more for its citizens. 60% of the residents, the 7,000 residents of Sturgis, South Dakota, said, no, we need to postpone this. We can do without it for a year. But business owners put the squeeze on the city council to go ahead, and the city council did. God Almighty. And, of course, the pettifogger, and all of this is coming from an article from NBC News. The pettifogger for a tourism souvenir wholesaler in Rapid City sent a nasty gram to the city council. And said that he will sue SUE if the city postponed it. And so the city council in Sturgis. Well, they decided to cave. And thereby became, in their own right, bioterrorists. they think they're going to do mass coronavirus testing to see if those tens of thousands bring the disease with them. So they think they're going to make $800 million, $400 million, whatever. But in the end, the cost in human life may far outstrip whatever money they bring in. Megan, is it just me, or does Kristi Noem sound like she's trying to kiss ass with the Trump administration in order to land a new job on the off chance COVID Caligula gets back into the White House? Oh, I think you're absolutely right, Megan. And I would go so far as to say that there are still rumblings that Corona Caligula may dump Mike Pencilneck Geek in favor of a female VP pick. So as to try to win back suburban soccer moms, maggot moms, who are fleeing from him in droves. When that gets mentioned, it's usually mentioned in connection with Nimrata Haley, Trump's first UN ambassador, former governor of South Carolina. Right? But she's got baggage. Among other things, she criticized Donald Trump. And then there's that whole got conned into talking about an imaginary nation with the fake president of Poland on a phone call from the Moscow Morning Zoo crew. That too. Kristi Noem would very much like to be vice president of the United States. Not just a new job, Megan, but the vice presidency. That's why she showed up and did everything in her power to praise and otherwise, you know, prostrate herself before Nitwit Nero when he showed up at Mount Rushmore a few weeks back. Thank you very kindly to Charlene. Charlene just took down the rest of the first $100 of Bruce's Memorial Challenge. Thank you, Charlene. And Charlene would like someone else to kick in the other, the remainder, so that she can then, it's a challenge. Finish the challenge, $100. Charlene's got the rest. Thank you, Charlene. Thank you very kindly. What? Billable Rick says, Bob, stop making earthquakes. Just as your show was broadcasting at 3:21 Pacific time, a quick jolting earthquake shook the building where I work in Yorba Linda. It's a good thing I'm in a one-story building in a somewhat flat area with a view of two goats. I better stop listening to your show, as it obviously causes earthquakes. Are the goats wearing bells that sound like this? Yeah, well, I'm not trying. I mean, last I checked, it was the Lebanese and the Homer sectionals and the transactionals that caused all the earthquakes. Just ask the mullah of Iran. So, you know, just want to make sure that wasn't me. Oh, shit, I forgot, Megan says. Since Vice President Biden committed publicly to a female vice president, what are the odds of Nitwit Nero dumping Pence to do the same? Apparently, the conversations are taking place, and Jared and Princess Iwanka my daddy Trump Kushner have been said to be behind that move. You know, we talk about these super spreader events, Sean Foicht and Christy Noem and Sturgis and whatnot, and the little super spreaders we had here in my county over the weekend. And what's most interesting out of all of that is that none of the people who want these things to happen ever say, I will be personally responsible. Never. And it's similar to what happens when some toxic industry wants to come to where you live. You know, the executives never say, hey, this pipeline is going to be perfectly safe. This this compressor station is going to be perfectly safe. In order to prove it, I'm going to build a mansion right next to it. So if it blows up, I'll be the first to go. They never do that. You reckon the members of the city council will be anywhere near Sturgis when this massive super spreader takes place? Because I kind of don't. And see, there's Kyle saying, look for Nikki Haley to replace Pence. Remember, Donald Trump is a stone-cold racist. So if he could get a white woman from South Dakota, he would far rather have her than a woman whose real name is Nimrata, not Nikki. Because for the maggot base, Nimrata Haley is not going to activate them, because they still have their most basic inherent biases. Christy Noem, on the other hand, well now. Sturgis, the bright side. Steve in New York says that $25,000 to $50,000 each, those millions of dollars could buy 16,000 to 32,000 new ventilators. So there's that. Yeah. James in Illinois says, Christy Noem, it's at least as much about not pissing off the maggot voters. Even if he loses, she doesn't want to piss them off. That's the other thing. Because they're not going to stop being maggoty even if he gets run out of office. Not in South Dakota, they're not. Oh, hell no. And Jude is working to figure out where Sean Foicht is going to be in Seattle. She says, I'm still searching to discover where he'll be in Seattle, but this is an interesting irony, Bob. I did find out where he'll be in Portland on the 9th. Well, no, he's in Seattle on the 9th. She says, if I'm not mistaken, it's the exact area where the agents from HLS and Customs Border guys are staying, the Marriott Hotel. A week ago last Saturday, I participated in thousands that surrounded this hotel chanting and calling out Marriott's complicity. All done with exquisite power and majesty of the people. One focus, one voice. Sean will be just across the street at Waterfront Park at 6 p.m. Jude says, take care, brother. You too, Jude. You too. August 8th, he's in Portland, according to his schedule, Jude. August 8th and then August 9th in Seattle, and all it says is Seattle. Now, August 29th, when he's in New York, he's going to be at Washington Square Park. So maybe our New York City members of the community might want to get an email off to Bill de Blasio and the governor. Ron in Raleigh says, Nikki Haley? That girl ain't white. She ain't even old-timey. Old-timey. That's good. Yeah. So, we're a little over halfway through the program, and if we can find $100, then we will be done with the challenge for the evening. Because Charlene will match that, and then in turn, that'll be matched by Labor Man, Ralphs, and our anonymous friend. Let's run over and check in with Scott in San Diego. Hey, Scott.
Someone left the cake out in the rain.
And I'll never have that recipe again.
Oh, no. Jesus. I know it's the wrong park. But when you said, what did you say, Washington Square Park?
Yes.
It just made me think of...
Well, hey, look, his itinerary for Los Angeles doesn't give a place. Maybe it will be MacArthur Park.
I thought MacArthur was in San Francisco, or is it? I guess it is L.A. I don't know.
I think it's L.A.
I'm down here in San Diego, Bob, trying to do my best to keep body and soul together.
And by the way, among the quick.
Yes. Let me give a general dispensation to Billable Rick. I don't care if you monkey with my tagline. We're all screwed, Bob. I got it from the Gorton fisherman. He took off his yellow slicker long enough to say, we're all scrod, Bob. There used to be a joke that had to do with parts of speech or the rules of grammar that had to do with the word scrod. And the old New Englander says, I've heard it many ways. But something about pluperfect something. I slept through all that in grammar school. Well, anyway, that's not why I called. I don't know why I called anyway, Bob. I have absolutely zilch, nada, nothing of interest to bring to the table today, except for two things. One thing is, I sent you an email regarding our favorite TV judge, over there on Fox News, speaking about the vaccine. Judge Pirro, did you get that? She says...
No.
You ain't injecting me with no vaccine. Yeah, I sent you the email.
Oh, yeah. I did see that, yes.
Yeah, okay. So
well, she doesn't have to be injected with vaccine because she's drinking disinfectant on the regular.
No.
Alcohol is a disinfectant.
Well, that is true. That is true. They soak their instruments in it. And you need a pretty big vat of vodka to soak a sousaphone, Bob.
I was thinking trombone, but, you know.
Well, I was going for alliteration. Soak a sousaphone. But anyway, that's one thing I have, which I've sent to you. And since it is after the first of the new month, can you believe it's August? Where the hell did the summer go? It zipped by for me. I don't know about you there in West Virginia.
No, I'm well. As you may, if you were here at the beginning of the program, I was at my little ray of sunshine best because it's still warm outside. I mean. It's a cool, comfortable 74 degrees here in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. We've had some rains come through, cooled things off, and, you know, we'll still have some 80-degree days and so forth, maybe even hit 90 again.
Yeah.
But what's the line from Don Henley's The Boys of Summer? I feel it in the air. Summer's out of reach. And so it's weird. This is how I reckon things by solstices and equinoxes.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's a good way to do and it. So, that's the natural way.
And so the longest day of the year is the summer solstice.
Right.
And even though that marks the first day of summer, per se, it also marks the shortening of days.
Yeah.
And the days will grow shorter all the way to the winter solstice. And so, you know, June 20th, 21st, 23rd, whatever it is, I start going, it's going to get dark sooner.
Yeah.
Because I love the long days, and I love the light, and the warmth, and the heat. And so July comes on with all its rich, the verdant wonderfulness. And, you know, that's when your tomatoes start ripening, and the corn around here is coming ripe right about, you know, right about now, next couple of weeks. Because, you know, 90-day corn. And summer will be gone before we know it. And just to revisit what I was saying last year, I'm not one of those people who said, oh, fall is my favorite time of the year. I love the colors. Those are the colors of death. Those are leaves dying.
Jesus. Have you got a dark cloud that's about 4 feet above your head that travels with you everywhere you go?
Well, Jesus. No, it's just that when I start when I start thinking about cold weather coming, I start thinking about freezing.
The autumn leaves.
Don't.
By my window.
I mean, I start. It's,
God damn you, it's death. It's destruction.
It is.
But don't you like how they sound when you walk across the yard and they crunch in the fall? Don't you love the smell of burning leaves? Yes, I know we shouldn't burn shit because it fucks up the atmosphere. But at this point, what's a couple of bushels of dry leaves burning going to add to the problem?
Yeah, I mean, so that first hint of wood smoke on the wind will create a certain wistfulness.
Oh, yeah.
But then again, I get wood smoke on the wind all summer long because of the hickory on the acorn.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. Well, anyway, when I think of the summer, I think back, and see, back when I was in school, in grade school especially, you know, fourth, fifth grade, sixth grade, whatever. We never, unless we got horrendous snow during the winter, by June 3rd, we were out of school. And none of this starting up in the third week of August. No, we didn't start school until after Labor Day. Okay, so there was that. But summers were blissful for me and my cohorts. Back in those days.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, that's the very definition of why we love summer. You know, those carefree days of our youth. No school. You know, go out of the house to play the minute the sun's up, and mom and dad aren't worried because, well, you'll be back when you know to come home when the lights come on.
Yeah, but the thing was, they seemed to those 3 months seemed to last forever. I remember we used to, across the street was a kid named Jimmy, and we go down into his rec room, and we, Jimmy and myself and the kid next door to my house and the kid across the street from his house would play these marathon Monopoly games.
Jimmy, have you ever seen a grown man naked?
No.
That's Timmy, isn't it?
But we would play these games. We'd put the board on the floor, and we'd sit around it, and we'd pick up who was going to be the banker. But normally, Monopoly games will last you a couple of hours. We had our own rules, okay? Not only could you get loans from the bank and theoretically go on forever, but we would try to go on forever. We'd finish playing after a couple of hours. Then we'd go out and ride bikes or play ball or whatever it was that we did, and then pick the game up where we left off the next day. And some of those Monopoly games, Bob, would go literally for weeks.
Yeah.
Until we just got so bored with it. Or unless Jimmy's mother...
Yeah, it got bored with it and declared the revolution and, you know, yeah.
Well, sometimes Jimmy's mother, in a cleaning fit, I mean, she knew she would have to be drunk not to know that every day we would play a couple of hours of Monopoly. She picked up, we went down there one day, where's the fucking board? You know, where are the tokens? Where's the bank? You know, somebody's done made off with the bank and the board and the deeds and the railroad card and all that stuff. So I don't know. But I miss those days because by the end of summer, by the halfway through August, you were almost bored enough to be looking forward to school starting up again. That's what I'm saying. And now here it is August.
And well, see, we'd be starting school in a couple of weeks. And we were on the verge of doing that until Make West Virginia great big old Governor Jim Justice said, now, in no way, shape, form, or fashion are we going to have school in August. We'll get started in September after we figure what's going on with this thing.
That's a rather slender reed to hang the future of.
So, to the best of my understanding, parents will have a virtual learning choice here that will be good for one semester. You know, just enough time to let the flu virus get going real good alongside the Rona.
Yeah. But does that instill any confidence at all? We'll just start in September until we find out what's going on with this thing. Holy fuck, Bob. My sphincter tightened just repeating what.
Now, y'all got to wear your masks. And see, this is what I love. You can't anything. You got to make a reference to a firearm to get West Virginians' attention. Y'all got to wear your masks because this mask is the only bullet in our gun for beating this disease. He said that.
Does he pull the bullet out of his shirt pocket and hold it up as a visual?
We got to nip it. Nip it in the bud. A little late for that, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. And, I must apologize on behalf of my Golden State here. There are stupid people out here. Stupid knows no bounds. You know, geographical or regional or any of that. There's always going to be these people who take this attitude of your average two-year-old. No offense intended to the average two-year-olds. I don't want to, and you can't make me. Oh, fuck, these people. I am just so sick of babies. They're little, tiny, whiny baby, and the biggest baby of all is not Baby Huey, Bob. No. Baby Huey could not hold a candle to the baby in chief. The big baby in chief, the whiny B-word, as Bill Maher says, is Donald John Trump. Nobody likes me. Oh, spare me.
Just yeah, well, as to the babies, you know, Scott, Steve wrote in a little bit ago from New York. Can you imagine if our fathers and mothers and grandpas and grandmas had pulled this selfish shit during the Great Depression and World War II? Can you imagine what would have happened? There are stories of people who did the I don't care about my fellow Merkin or the War Office. Back then, the neighborhood would have shunned these people and branded them unpatriotic and not giving a shit about their fellow Americans in the minute war.
Yeah, that's exactly it. You know, I guess it was Brokaw who dubbed them the greatest generation. And in a real way, they were. I mean, they had their faults. But by God, they knew enough about preservation, not only of the species, but of a way of life to win the shit.
Again, here in the hills and hollers of West Virginia.
Yeah.
they, like everywhere else, they had blackout curtains in the high school and the primary school, the elementary mm-hmm. school. They had blackout curtains so that no lights. Now, wait. I mean, you got to ponder this so that no lights could escape in the night to provide guidance to German bombers or Japanese bombers, for that matter.
What about the submarines, Bob? Certainly you have navigable rivers up there.
Well, yeah, I mean, the submarine could go all the way around the panhandle, all the way around the peninsula of Florida, to New Orleans, getting the Mississippi River, come all the way, the German submarine come all the way up the Mississippi River to Paducah, getting the Ohio River, come all the way up the Ohio River to Point Pleasant, and then getting the Kanawha River and come all the way up the Kanawha River to Gauley Bridge. And then, then they'd have to get out and walk.
Yeah, but you'd hear it coming. The German submarine powered by Schnitzel, and you'd hear the distant sound of oompa music. That's the thing.
But they had blackout curtains, and they didn't make fun of it. And they had ration books. And every issue of the high school newspaper here contained some article or some mention of somebody who was working a job and socking money away in war bonds. But yeah. They only came in a certain denomination, so what you would do is you would buy war stamps until you had enough stamps to make up a bond.
Yeah, and victory gardens?
Sure.
Yeah, and meatless Mondays or whatever the fuck it was. I mean, people had a sense of duty. And it wasn't just a matter of obligation or of something being forced upon someone. You knew, I mean, it's...
Well, it was an existential threat.
But it was how you were wired. You didn't question preserving the way of life, warts and all, goddammit. You know? I don't get people. Well, I do get them. And you know why? I don't know why I did this. I don't even know why. So why am I asking you if you know why? Last night, I'm browsing around on YouTube, and I'm watching. I see this six-hour YouTube chunk of video. NBC, John Chancellor, and Tom Brokaw, Garrick Utley, and Jessica Savage, who was Savage. Oh, she was mean. She'd come on with that NBC News capsule, and by God, you sat up straight. Because she meant business when it came to delivering the news. But anyway, from 1980, November of 1980, 6 hours worth of NBC election news. And I'm sitting here watching that last night just for something different to watch. I mean, not necessarily positive, but something different to watch. And they had the big analog map in Studio 8H. Of 30 Rock, they had this big honking map of the United States with each of the states named, okay, and the map before they started counting the votes was a neutral color. And inside the map, behind the neutral color gels, were a set of red lights, bulbs, and a set of blue lights. And that thing almost burned. And they had to rush in little portable air conditioning units behind the fucking map. Even the studio central air conditioning wasn't enough to keep that thing. Some of the gels would melt and warp and shit. But anyway, here's the thing that I watched for. As the map lit up, it became almost totally blue. And you said, well, wait a minute. It was Carter, the Democratic incumbent, and Reagan, the Republican challenger, why was the map blue? Well, that's the color code back in 1980. Blue was for Republicans and red was for Democrats. And I sat there watching it and I said, I wonder if 2020 is going to be a big blue mark all over the map. And I know it won't be all over the map, but I think there might be some surprising places that were red last time that are going to be blue this time. But it doesn't happen automatically. It's something that each and every one of us has to have a hand in. Think of it as our own call to action, as in wartime. You know, we've got to exercise our civic franchise and stand up for doing the right thing, basically. And even if you're not really going gaga over Joe Biden and whoever is, if he ever says who his running mate will be, you the choice is clear. Do you want 4 more years of this delusional, demented, inept fool and everything that he represents? Or do you want to hit the pause button with even a slender hope of regaining some measure of equilibrium nationally and repair our reputation in the rest of the world as well? I mean, that's what the question is. It's a one question test in less than 90 days, I think, is where we are now. We're coming up on 90 days. Sorry, I didn't mean to filibuster, but I'm just so...
No, that's quite all right.
Yes, there is a coronavirus going on. And yes, the economy's gone into the crapper. And yes, I know there's a lot of stuff and everybody's got cabin fever and all that stuff. But Jesus, we have got to get a grip, hike up our big boy or big girl pants and behave appropriately. Because if not, we are indeed all screwed, Bob.
And see, yes,
the
economy is in the tank, but the economy can be revived, especially if you acknowledge that Keynesian economics are real.
Yeah.
It was supposed to be a V-shaped recovery because we were going to shut it all the way down to the ground, and then it was just going to start right back up when we opened back up. But instead, we got the reopen frenzy going, and the crybabies cried, and they whined, and they pissed, and they moaned, and so we gave in to them. Just like the city council knuckled under in Sturgis.
Yeah.
And here, I have no doubt that it was not the school board's idea to have the graduation. It was a bunch of piss ants. Well, my baby deserves a graduation. And see, it is all over. It's all over the country. Instead of Ken's, Darlene in Connecticut writes, maybe we should swap him out for Sean's or however it's spelled, as we had our own super spreader, Sean, in my town. He wasn't taking no for an answer for his annual rodeo stampede event within walking distance of my home. Not my kind of event, so I never go, and I can take a wild guess as to the average attendee. And I'm not talking black, Democrat, and liberal by any stretch. Not only is super spreader Sean claiming no alcohol will be permitted on the fairgrounds, ha 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 ha, but he doubled down and wanted 2 weekends in a row for this bullshit.
Where is the rodeo stampede happening?
Well, this is in Connecticut. The ag group passed the buck. The ag group passed the buck to the board of selectmen, who passed it back to tell him no. Thankfully, the ag group grew some balls after members threatened to resign because of the potential liability and told super spreader Sean no. Shockingly, one of the Republican ag members called Republican super spreader Sean and told him that sometimes making money is not as important as people's health. That's how she said it to him, allegedly. And then this, as to Summer, I am totally with you, Bob, on Summer. That was in all caps. I'm getting more and more aggravated with all the fall lovers. Why? Everything around us is dying during the fall. All I like is Halloween. July is my favorite month. I savored every day, and now it's over. I can't take it, so I decided that August will be July, too. So happy July 3rd again, Bob. Well, happy July 3rd again to you, Darlene. So that means that means when the program's over, I'm going to turn on C-SPAN and watch them set off fireworks at Mount Rushmore in an area that's as dry as timber again. Tinder.
Do they? So up in Connecticut, they've got a rodeo stampede every year.
Apparently so.
Well, and whoever was writing to the people in charge coined a phrase that I think should be our we need to have a banner made and march around with it. What this country needs is a bumper crop of bulls. Don't you think? We need to grow a pair, several pairs. Everybody, man, woman, child, get you your balls. Let's make America truly.
That's one of the ancillary problems with all of this, Scott. We seem to think that the only display of strength has to involve violence. You know, so you got balls, you know, because you're willing to stand up for your rights.
Well, I don't.
In a moment such as this, courage is defined by simply staying home.
Yeah.
And by the way, Flavio says, my little brother is not voting for Biden. Good grief. Jimmy Dore poisoned his mind so. The other day, Dore was calling Dr. Fauci a liar because he admitted to not recommending masks early on because of a possible run on PPE, surgical masks and N95 respirator masks, which is exactly what happened. He wanted to prioritize health workers. This nuance is lost on Jimmy Dore and now on my little brother. Oh, well, you know, we got the maggot COVIDiots on one side, and we've got the sparkle fart propelled unicorn cavalry purity patrol on the other. And they're both, for all intents and purposes, bioterrorists. Because, see, if we don't get Biden in, if we don't unify behind Biden, and he does not become president, then we continue with this, where we are now. And it won't be, you know, it won't be a couple of million dead. It could just run and run and run until it's 20 million dead. And that seems to be where these the maggot bioterrorists want to go. And the purity patrol, on the other hand, is more than happy to let us go there because they want a pony. And it's maddening. You know, it's like Kyle just wrote in a little bit ago and said, sigh, how is it that we have all the stupids in government in positions of actual power? And I know exactly what he's talking about, because there was another piece of news that that hit home hard for me this weekend. You know, of course, on Friday we talked about, and previously, Louis Asparagus Gohmert having gotten the Rona. And when he found out...
Got it from the mask.
And when he found out, he put his mask on that he got it from, that he claimed, and went straight back to his office to breathe all over his staff and tell them in person that he had the Rona. And then he announced that he was starting hydroxychloroquine, which ain't going to do dick for him.
Yeah.
But there's more. He did more damage. So, among other things, let's see here. Louis Asparagus Gohmert is a member of the House Natural Resources Committee. And that committee is headed by Chairman Raul Grijalva, whom I consider a friend. Because he's one of those members of Congress who will actually talk to you about what, you know, the coal company is doing to Appalachia.
Yeah.
And he's trying to keep the AIC Act moving. Well, Louis Asparagus Gohmert apparently spewed on Raul Grijalva, and now Raul, God damn it, has announced he has the Rona. And of course, he... God damn it. That's what I mean when I say they're bioterrorists.
Yeah. Well, I mean, as far as Louis going back to share his diagnosis in terms of explanation and literally, you know, breathe on him, he was just doing what Jesus did. Didn't Jesus go up in the upper room after the resurrection and said, "Peace, be still," and then he breathed on his disciples, Bob, in the upper room? Didn't he do it? Didn't Jesus do it?
I thought he'd done that when he took a hike out onto the lake. That peace be still business, or he was in the boat with the fisher folk, and the storm come up.
He may have. No, is that the time they caught the fish with the gold coin in it?
I believe so. Yes.
And he encouraged people to pay their fucking taxes. that Jesus boy, I tell you, you couldn't count on him for nothing, telling people to pay taxes,
and
that Pete. That Peter telling people to respect and obey civil authorities. Wait a minute, someone's at the door. Go ahead.
Well, and I was going to mention this earlier when I was talking about.
Yeah, baby, thank you. Appreciate it.
When I was talking
about. You too.
When I was talking about Americans thinking strength equals violence, that's why so many white folks couldn't get their heads around what Dr. King was doing. And almost immediately, Lou sent in a note saying John Lewis had balls and he didn't physically attack anyone. Peaceful resistance.
Right.
But people didn't understand. And many of them still damned well don't.
Did you happen to watch Lawrence O'Donnell on Thursday night?
Yeah, I did not.
And it's probably on YouTube. I meant to check the other day. At the end of his show Thursday night, and I got to cut into this because I need my fucking nicotine gum.
Jonesing, are we?
I can't help it. Jonesing like a motherfucker, Bob. Anyway, at the end of his show, you remember John Lewis submitted an op-ed to be published after his death? You're aware of that, right?
Yes.
All right.
And yes, Morgan Freeman.
Morgan Freeman read it, accompanied by a montage of scenes and photographs from... Oh, I'm just tearing into this microphone, Bob. Scenes and photographs from Mr. Lewis's life. And I'm telling you, that was one of the most inspiring things that I've ever seen in my 66 years on the planet. Not only to hear his words just days after his death, intoned by Morgan Freeman, who's got, well, literally the voice of God. Didn't he play God in a movie once?
Yes.
I believe he did. But to hear those hear that eloquence of John Lewis in that voice with that montage of pictures, you know, during his mission, From young manhood, what was he, about 14 or so, when he first heard Dr. King on the radio and was inspired enough to become part of the solution as opposed to being part of the problem, and dedicated his life, his very life, to that good work, you know? Check on YouTube. I'm sure it's on there.
No, I didn't see it when it happened live, but I did see the clip.
Yeah. Just an incredible... Somebody, I don't know if they have Emmy Awards on cable for that sort of thing, but whoever's in charge of nominations needs to submit that, because that's Emmy-worthy, or whatever other award would be comparable. That's some good use of journalism and media. So.
I agree. Let's see what there were a couple of other things for you. Randy in PA noted, I spent my July inside. And adds, by the way, there's no such fish as Boston Scrod. It's baked cod or haddock, with an exclamation point. And I admit, the first time I ever saw the word Scrod was at a sort of a chain restaurant called Eaton Park, which is out of Pennsylvania. They opened up a location in Morgantown when I was there having my cup of coffee in law school.
Yeah.
And I remembered seeing Scrod on the menu and thinking, you know, I'll eat a piece of fish now and then, but I ain't eating nothing that sounds like something you have to treat with an antifungal. Scrod.
Yeah, we sat down, Marie and I, and had ourselves a mess of scrod. That we did.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you got? I got scrod. Oh, a million units of penicillin will clear it up.
Earlier, when you were talking about who is the guy that someone has convinced, certain people on the left, brothers of listeners to this program.
No, that's Flavio's brother.
Flavio's brother. But who was the person who dropped that notion into his head?
Jimmy Dore.
Who is that? I don't know that name.
How to describe? I mean, he's a podcaster, what have you, and he's a member of the Sparkle Fart Propelled Unicorn Cavalry Purity Brigade. And no one, and there's only one or maybe two politicians pure enough to meet the standards, the high standards of Jimmy Dore. And so if the whole fucking country dies of COVID, that's okay by him. Because they didn't have the common sense to listen when he and his were telling the world how stupid they were for not being ideologically pure.
Well, that's utterly irresponsible.
I mean, Flavio followed up and said, Jimmy Dore's practically spewing Trump talking points. Really, he's gotten that horrible. But you can call it horrible, you can call it what you want, but you know, there are still people who, you know, nod their little heads and yes, absolutely.
Because, well, the whole modus operandi of Trump is bombast, bluster, and bullshit. And I, you know, at this point, I don't know how many circuits around the sun I've got left, but I have reached my fill. If I am never exposed ever again after this to a particle of bombast, bluster, or bullshit, I won't lack. I've got enough saved up in less than 4 years of Trump to last me the rest of my natural life and into the next, you know, the world beyond. And all of this was avoidable. I don't want to relitigate, but Jesus Christ, it could have so easily been avoided if people had behaved with even a modicum of sense 4 years ago. I mean, and I hope to God that we learned something and have been learning something. Apparently not everybody has. Some of the people are in the slow seats. I don't mean to say negative things about the challenged, but there are some people who are reality challenged. If you can't take an honest look around with clear eyes and see this, the wretched state of things, then maybe you shouldn't be voting at all. You know? I just don't, I just, I, This is why I'm not able to call in so much, because I truly get worked up. I fear for the future of the people in this country, because we're not engaged in a way that we need to be. This is not a fucking made-for-TV movie here. This is real life. People are dying. People are starving. People are losing their goddamn domiciles. You know? Hell, there might be people within the sound of my voice who don't know with any degree of confidence where they're going to be living a week from now, or what, you know, what will constitute their next meal, or if they're going to live long enough to have the next meal. This is real can be.
Absolutely.
And we need to get that. We need to get that, and we need to behave accordingly. You know, not just with the mask, and not just with being responsible. And I would love to go out, you know, without a mask and frolic and cavort and throw a frisbee or something. But I know better. I know that, to me, I mean, if you're going to talk about Christian values, you know, we in this context, we must deny ourselves the momentary pleasures of doing whatever the fuck we want. You know, and the higher authority is an angry old man in the sky with a long beard and a scowl on his face. The operative notion here is we're doing or not doing in service to one another. I mean, that to me was the message of Jesus, you know.
Well, but that's before the death cult got hold of him.
Oh, I know. And did I even mention that I'll be sending you $10? I got to waxing lyrical about August and long ago summers that I forgot to tell you I'm going to be sending you $10. I'll do it on the.
Okay. Well, we'll count that against the challenge within a challenge that's on the table, so that we only need $90 more. And then Charlene will kick in the other half, and that will meet that'll meet Bruce's Memorial Challenge. So thank you.
All right. See, sometimes I get so worked up that I forget why I called. And that was one of the reasons to mention that thing about Judge Papiro. Nobody's going to be sticking me with nothing.
Right. Yeah. And it was... Ron in Raleigh, who wrote a little bit ago and said, have we settled on vodka as Judge Jeanine's favorite tipple? I've always thought of her as a gin drinker. Gin and tonic with Schweppes tonic and Boodle's gin. Well, if she's a gin drinker, I'd say she's probably a fan of that great, that fantastic brand of yore peddled by Red Skelton, Guzzler's Gin.
Isn't there a gin that has a picture of Queen, that long-reigning monarch?
Oh, Victoria? Yeah, that's Bombay gin.
Is that Bombay? I couldn't remember whether it was Gordon's or I was never much of a gin. Can you tell what I'm doing there?
Yeah, it spare us the sound effects, Scott.
well, my God,
Alma just wrote in from New Mexico and said, I wish Scott would call in more. I need the honest-to-God truth, and it is refreshing to hear it being said. I don't understand why people allow all these vile creatures to stay in office.
Well, I think I know why they do. Because there's money in it.
Right, it works for them.
Yeah.
And, you know, I completely blew past it, didn't even think about it. We had a shit show today.
A shit show, Bob?
Yeah, yeah. he came out of his spider hole and babbled incoherently some more. I even have I got a clip of him having a hard time with the word plasma.
Oh, the breathing.
Very good. We're also very encouraged about the prospects for plasma therapies. and that we're working on, and that's a brilliant art. It's really an art. And we launched a national plasma drive last week. I was at the Red Cross building.
Plasma. Plasma. P-L-A-Z-H-M-A. Plasma. Now, here's what's interesting, though.
Has he been hitting the gym?
No, he's been hitting the plasma.
Oh.
That's because it's been talked about a little bit, and now it's out in the sort of out in the zeitgeist. And so the idea being that he has been receiving plasma therapy to help ward off the Rona. And then over the weekend, weirdness, the White House says, no, no, he wasn't whisked away to Walter Reed. That didn't happen. May have. Because among other things, there was a photo Scott had taken of him, and his right hand is holding up a bunch of newspapers. You know, he's got his sweaty white shirt, you know, plastered to his 52 Bs, and his right hand is under these newspapers, and you can see that the back of his hand has a big ass bruise or hematoma on it. The kind that people tend to get when they've had IVs run through the back of their hand.
Yeah. And that was that photo was taken on that day.
Yeah.
After he had come back from Walter Reed.
No. This past weekend.
Oh, this past weekend?
Yes.
Oh, mercy.
Yeah, right. Oh, and by the way, we're getting an update on Scrod. Elberton, Rhode Island, wants us to know that Scrod is a fish caught off the coast of Rhode Island. It's about the size of a perch. So there's that. And
it's a white fish, I think.
It is. It's a mild fish too. Jude wants to remind us that today is the anniversary of the massacre at the Walmart in El Paso.
Yes, it is.
And says, take a moment to reflect on what's occurring in that city today, and all while children about 20 minutes away remain all alone in detention sites. I prefer the term concentration camps because they are. Jude notes the boots and flowers of women standing were present just 1 month after this community was in trauma. Another day of horror. 1 year has passed for these survivors and families. In peace. In peace indeed. Thank you, Jude.
Well, we're like, 90 days away from getting a chance to do something tangible. And then after that, it's just a matter of holding things together until January 20th. You know, I don't know what network I was looking at the other night. And it was a picture of Trump, you know, film, video, whatever. And he doesn't look good around the eyes. He looks like he's drawn. You know, I can't say that he's pale. Because
with a Sharpie?
No, drawn in the sense of, you know, how ill people look when they're beginning to decline. Maybe it was just the angle or the lighting or something. But it's, you know, you look at his eyes and they're first of all, they're dead. So there's that. But you know how it shows up if someone is beginning to get quite ill, one of the first things you can tell is there's a hollow, not a hollowness, but just a drawn look in the face and the eyes kind of sink or something. I don't know how to describe it because I'm not a doctor. I don't play one on the radio, Bob. I can barely play the radio. I don't have a radio. That's how bad things have become here.
Indeed.
It's Shea Guru. Actually, I do have a radio. It's a realistic DX440, AM, FM, and shortwave. I need to get an adapter for that thing. And start firing that puppy up to get listen to them shortwave stations again. See, that's where the crazy talk thrives.
Oh, no doubt.
These offshore shortwave stations, you know, where the people can't even get on the internet. they've got to resort to 100-year-old technology to get their message out. I'll bet your old, what's his name? Alex Jones.
You,
he's on shortwave somewhere for people who don't have internet or like they're tied up or something and aren't allowed to change things, settings or whatever.
And I've got a little more audio from the shit show. This is the latest manifestation of how awesome we're handling the disease.
Today in a tweet that Dr. Birx was taking bait from Speaker Pelosi. What did you mean by that, considering that she was just describing the facts about the case of the pandemic right now across the country?
Well, I think we're doing very well, and I think that we have done as well as any nation. If you really look, if you take a look at what's going on, especially now with all these flare-ups on nations that they were talking about, and don't forget, we're much bigger than other than India and China. China's having a massive flare-up right now. India has a tremendous problem. Other countries have problems, and I noticed that in the news, in the evening news, I never read about that in any of the news. I don't read about the other countries. You're starting to see that other countries are having very big flare-ups. Countries that thought they were over it, like we thought we might be over it in Florida, and then all of a sudden it comes back. They do come back.
It didn't come back. It never went away. This isn't the second wave. This is still the first wave, but these goddamn morons are too dense and too willfully ignorant to know it.
But I think we're doing very well. I told Dr. Birx I think we're doing very well. She was in my office a little while ago. She's a person I have a lot of respect for. I think Nancy Pelosi's treated her very badly, very, very badly, very nasty. And
nasty?
I'm just referring to the fact that I thought that really they should say the job we've done, whether it's on ventilators or testing. We've tested now over 60 million people.
Doesn't matter if it takes 7 to 14 days to get the results back, which it does, because you can't contact trace out of that.
No other country is even close to that. We've tested 60 million people with great, in many cases, about 50% now rapid fire, meaning 5 to 15 to 20 minute tests where you get the result almost immediately.
No. Yeah, that Abbott, that part is in part the Abbott Labs test, Scott, the one that yields a false negative 48% of the time. And among other things at the shit show today, going back to something we noted earlier in the program, the vaccine, the October surprise vaccine. Well, Daniel Dale with CNN tweeted, Trump again claims that a vaccine might be available maybe far in advance of the end of the year. It's already August, and that timeline is much more optimistic than that of Fauci and other experts. He's setting it up. He's gonna claim that. He'll have little bottles of saline and claim that it's a vaccine if it's not fucking Lysol.
Pretty transparent, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
Well, here's the deal. You talk about the wave, or he's talking about the wave. Here's how I picture it. Here's your screenshot of the day here on radio. Remember the original Poseidon Adventure at the start of the film?
Oh, yeah.
You remember up on the bridge of the SS Poseidon? Who was the captain? Leslie Nielsen in a dramatic role.
Yes, he was. Okay? Forgotten he was. That.
And the guy gives him the advisory from the radar, you know, the second mate or whoever it was across the way. And old Leslie is standing there at the wheel or looking at the chart or something. And somebody says, oh, my God. And he looks. And that look of horror as that fucking wave. Now, you want to talk about a wave. That's the wave that's coming to get us. You know, this is not a second wave. The whatever wave has existed up till now was only to let us know that the real wave is coming. Okay? It was a preliminary wave.
Yeah.
It was kind of
flu like, season.
Hi. You know, a little digit wave. Hi. Who was that? Who was that actor? Pangborn.
Franklin Pangborn.
Franklin, as a Franklin Pangborn wave. Hi.
God, you know? I you just had to mention him.
Franklin Pangborn. There's a movie called International House.
Oh, I love it. Yes.
Which W.C. Fields was in, but it wasn't his thing. I mean, it wasn't a Fields movie, but he was in it. And he gets off the boat and doesn't know where he is. And he looks at Franklin Pangborn and says, "Say, where am I?" And he's got a boutonniere in his lapel, of course. And Franklin Pangborn replies, "Woohoo!" And Fields responds, "Don't let the posy fool you." He was also in My Little Chickadee. Franklin Pangborn was, and I think Fields sits down to a, and he's broke, of course, and Fields sits down to a game of poker with him. No, he sits down with Fields.
Yeah.
Fields is already sitting there. Franklin Pangborn, with his cowboy duds, sits down with him and says, "Is this a game of chance?"
"Not the way I play it."
And Fields says, "Not the way I play it." And so they're cutting cards.
Yeah.
And Franklin Pangborn goes first and holds the card up, and King puts it back. Fields picks it up. Fields cuts the cards, holds the card only to him. It's like a deuce or something. And he says, "Ace," and puts it back. "You want to see?" And starts. "Not the way I play it." Let's see. Larry in Liberalville says, "There was a joke in Playboy back in the 70s, subject line scrod, I think, that went, a taxi driver pulls up to the curb of a bus station, and a sailor just on leave hops in and asks the driver, 'Do you know where I can get scrod?' And the taxi driver responds, 'Man, I've heard that question 1,000 times, but this is the first time I've heard it in the pluperfect subjunctive.'"
Yeah. That's the joke I was trying to remember.
Yeah, that's the one. Yeah, well, count on this. Count on the Horn Family Community Congregation. In the pluperfect subjunctive. Oh. Yeah.
Oh, mercy.
Darlene with a note says, "I just got to ask my governor a question on Zoom, and he kindly addressed it and said I had a good idea about allowing family members to weigh into the state's hired outside consultant study about what happened in the nursing homes when COVID first hit in March, as the nursing homes took a serious hit and I could have lost my mother. I hope he follows through. He's a very affable, super nice man. He seems very earnest, although allowing family input into the study would seem obvious to me." Good on you, Darlene. Now all we got to do is, if we can get the Horn Family Community Congregation active to let folks like Bill de Blasio and Andrew Cuomo know that there's a super spreader coming to New York, and the same with Gavin Newsom and Kate Brown and Jay Inslee, and shut super spreader Sean right the hell down.
Well, was he over the weekend up in one of the upper state counties of New York? There was a gathering. Is there a group or a musical act called Chainsmokers?
Yes, and that was not upstate. That was out in the Hamptons. Or maybe Westchester County.
Okay.
I'm not sure.
Oh, that's right. But it was like a huge crowd.
No social distancing, LARPing and smolikin and grabulating and wallering.
Yeah.
No masks.
And apparently the governor of New York is like fit to be tied.
Well, and you know why? Because see, this wasn't a bunch of poorly educated hillbillies. The DJ for this thing was the head of Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, yeah. Somebody on the news last night was saying that he's got like half a dozen versions of the pop classic "Rescue Me." Fontella Bass, I believe, was the original artist, and none of the remixes are any damn good. They're all garbage. Now, how can you fuck up a song like "Rescue Me"? You know, it's impossible. And every time I hear Karen Bass's name, I think of Fontella Bass, and then I start singing that fucking song.
Which, by the way, I'm okay with Kevin Bass. Or Karen. Not, I'm sorry.
Did I say Kevin?
No, I did. Karen Bass. I'm okay with... I'm pretty much okay with anybody he chooses that isn't... And I'll still vote for him, even if he does, but who isn't, you know... what's her name? Klobuchar.
Yeah, I'm pretty much right with you. I mean, here's the deal. Who you want for your vice president can't be somebody who's perfectly equipped for something else. Like one of our senators here, Senator Harris. Oh, she's the head of the fucking Justice Department, Bob, under a Biden administration. Don't pick Senator Warren to be vice president. I mean, I think she'd make a good vice president.
To be fair, I've been making this argument since before the Rona was a thing about age and the presidency.
Well, I remember that. You know.
No one needs to be the vice presidential nominee who is in one of the higher risk categories for morbidity and mortality from the virus. That lets out, and I'm not being mean, but that lets out Elizabeth Warren.
I'm
speaking only in terms of age.
Yeah. Put her in charge of Securities and Exchange Commission. She's well suited for that. I mean, she has.
Why can't she just stay in the Senate, Scott?
Well, no, I don't.
Where we need people like her.
I know, but I'm just saying. What are the ages of the people that are supposedly on Biden's shortlist? You know, younger is better. Qualified, obviously, trumps everything. But younger is better. You want a scrapper, somebody who will be our version of Agnew. You're probably not old enough to remember Spiro Agnew.
I do.
Okay, well, he was like the pit bull. He was Nixon's pit bull. He got to say out loud the things that Nixon had, you know, wanted to stick to a little decorum. And that's why he had fucking Spiro Ted Agnew on the ticket. He had only been governor of Maryland, a corrupt little state, I might say, you know, for less than 2 years when Nixon picked him, you know. So whoever Biden picks, it's got to be somebody who's going to be young and have the energy and the smarts and the scrappiness. You know,
no, I'm past scrappy. I want mean.
Now, but wait a minute. Do you have CNBC on or MSNBC?
No.
Oh, Jesus. I've got it on with the volume down. There was just a picture, a graphic of Joe Biden standing there with a microphone in his hand, looking off to the side, and a dark-colored mask pulled down while he's speaking. And he looks, except for his hair color, he looks for all the world like C. Everett Koop, you know, with his chin whiskers.
Oh, dear God.
If you're going to talk, take the mask completely off. You don't want to be looking like, you know, some Amish guy, Amos or Zeke or somebody.
Zebediah.
Central Pennsylvania.
did you ever see the Harvard Lampoon of USA Today? Many years ago now.
Oh, God. Yes, I remember it. Yes.
You know how the masthead of the real USA Today says, via satellite.
Yeah.
Well, the Harvard Lampoon version said, via big truck. But the one thing I remember from it was the TV listings. And the listing for Omission Impossible. Zebediah and Lemuel refuse to answer the demon telephone and thereby miss out on another adventure. Lemuel.
Yeah, there's a good old solid name.
Hey, you want... you're just going to hate this. David in South Carolina, Stan, just sent this along because 2020.
Yeah.
I wish to hell this was The Onion. Sincerely, I do. But it's The Hill instead. I'm not going to ask... For the remainder of this year, I don't ask what's next. I just sit back and wait.
Yeah.
Because my imagination can't keep up. And of course, it's a West Virginia story. Headline, because 2020. Swarm of zombie cicadas under influence of parasitic fungus returns to West Virginia.
Holy fuck.
Oh shit, they're trying to morph up a Mothman. But this memo to The Hill, there is no such place as the or institution as the University of West Virginia. I'm a proud double degree from Harvard on the Mon, and it is by God West Virginia University. Just like the biggest university, I think, in Oklahoma is OU, not UO. It's Oklahoma University. Horst can check me on that. But a parasitic fungus that creates zombie cicadas has reemerged in West Virginia, according to new research from, blue pencil here, West Virginia University. The fungus... Oh, dear God, they really shouldn't have put this out there because now the hillbillies are going to go and start eating cicadas. Fuck me dead. The fungus, Massospora, drives male cicadas. Oh, wait a minute. This is apparently a drag queen fungus for cicadas.
Oh, dear.
The fungus, Massospora, drives male cicadas to imitate female mating calls. When the call attracts other males... The fungus, which contains similar chemicals to those found in hallucinogenic mushrooms, oh, great, transmits to them.
God damn, send me one of them cicadas, Bob. I'll roll it and light it.
It's not much of a... It's not a great buzz. See what I did there? Cicadas, buzz. Yeah.
And you're right, the thumpers will eat them things because St. John the Baptist ate locusts and honey. Get some local honey and a couple of them locusts, and baby, you're set for the weekend.
Loco locust. Loco locust. Head on down. Next thing you know, you're seeing doves in over people's heads and shit. The fungus eats away at cicadas and replaces what it eats with fungal spores. This is out of fucking Star Trek, according to the outlet. Kipton, they put fungus in our bugs. As a result, the insects continue to fly and infect others while decaying, with the fungus conducting biological puppetry, according to the researchers. Come on! Just stop it! Really? Brian Lovett, a postdoctoral researcher with the Davis College of Agriculture, Natural Resources, and Design, said, "Since we are also animals like insects, we like to think we have complete control over our decisions and we take our free will for granted. But when these pathogens infect cicadas, it's very clear that the pathogen is pulling the behavioral levers of the cicada to cause it to do things which are not in the interest of the cicada, but is very much in the interest of the pathogen." Yeah. Essentially, the cicadas are luring others into becoming infected because their healthy counterparts are interested in mating. Well, it's the coronavirus for goddamn bugs!
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
The unsuspecting, uninfected cicadas are like, well, I mean, he was making girly noises.
How many times have we used that excuse? Some of us, anyway. I didn't reach under the dress. And what a lovely gown it was, officer. I mean,
so they knew. They apparently already knew about this. But co-author of the paper, Matthew Kasson, said, our previous literature always mentioned the strange behaviors associated with Massospora and some closely allied fungi, but what was missing was a synthesis of all this new information that had come to light. The most interesting finding is the things we still don't know. We realized that there were some possible scenarios for infection that we'd not considered before. Again, it's the Rona, only for cicadas.
Is it possible, Bob, that actually the end is underway, that enough things have enough circumstances have come together in just the right way, circumstances have conspired to trigger what for all intents and purposes is going to be the end, or if not the end, the ultimate end, a grand shifting of things? Because it seems like there's maybe we're just paying attention more, and because of Corona, we're on edge and looking for bad news. But it seems to me there's a lot of shit going on.
Oh, there's a lot going on down here.
And it doesn't involve, you know, hot dogs or balloons or pony rides for the kids.
Or bad records from the cutout bin.
Yeah, yeah. Jeez, I got a few of those in the closet. But, I mean, you know me, I tend to be an optimist.
Stop telling people what's in your closet, Scott.
Well, you don't want to go in there. You just don't. I would like to think that there's a way out. But, you know, and I was doing relatively well until you brought up the fungus-laden cicadas, for Christ's sake. I mean...
Hey, Grandpa, what's for supper?
Wild honey and cicadas with fungus in them.
Yum, yum.
Has old Alex Jones gotten onto this yet? And you can quote me. It boggles the fucking mind, Bob. I mean... And I've said this a number of times. Back in my wayward youth, I ingested a fair number of powerful hallucinogenics or hallucinogens. Even my wildest adventure chemically did not prepare me adequately for the incredible level of surreal, bizarre stuff that I encounter on a daily basis in the world today. You know? I mean, and I would like to think that I was a pretty sturdy trooper when it came to unreal, surreal, bizarre shit to deal with and dance with. You know? Because you tend to build up a tolerance to weird shit. If you're geared toward that.
Well, it's like what Dr. Thompson said, when the going gets weird, the weird turn pro.
Well, yeah. And we've bought the ticket, therefore we are compelled to take the fucking ride.
Yep.
And it's not pretty. It is not pretty. It's not fun. And afterwards, as the train is pulling in to the platform, you don't say, oh, wow, let's go again. You know, once is enough with this trip. This is the fucking brown acid on brown acid is what this is.
No shit. Well, you're getting mail. And by the way, thanks to Charles. Thank you very kindly. We are now down to $80 to go, thanks to Charles and you. Down to $80 to go on the last half of Bruce's Memorial Challenge and Charlene's Challenge Within a Challenge. So hopefully maybe we'll knock out a little bit more of that, and then maybe the overnight crew can take over from there. Thank you, Charles.
It's a good investment, people. It's an excellent investment. I mean, where else on a typical August Monday can you talk about everything from fungus-laden cicadas to W.C. Fields to Franklin Pangborn, for Christ's sake? I'm sure the people had to go look him up, a lot of them. Although we've got a pretty hip crowd. They know the deal, you know. Where else can you get this? This level and caliber of not only information, but I would like to think in my own little way, I bring a few yucks to the proceedings. You know, and I think so.
Well, you absolutely do. And I've got it. You know, I got it. I got to have a little help when it gets to the point of the hallucinogenic cicadas. I mean,
we got
opioids, we got meth, we got crack, and now it's going to be, wait a minute, why are you swatting at things that aren't there? Have you been eating magic cicadas again?
Crunchy. I don't know, Bob.
Jeremy in Vermont says, Scott, don't joke. The religiously insane of the right are already saying it's the end. See the Mormons and the Jehovah's Witnesses, which is a large part of the non-mask groups. They think if it's my time to go, so be it, and don't care if they take others with them.
Yeah.
And, by the way, Flavio says, there's no exit. Haven't you read Sartre? Well, yes, and yes. But this, and though, we're going to end the program with a hell of a cowbell for this. This comes from Randy in PA. on the cicadas. There's a fortune to be made making little tiny cicada masks. And, you know, they got those buggy eyes on the side, so, you know, the loops could probably just sit back behind their eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah, but then the fucked up hallucinogenic cicadas would, you know, pull them down below their mandibles and wear them like a goddamn chin strap.
Yeah. Little teeny tiny severed coops all over the fucking place.
And, oh no, Ron in Raleigh points out, Karen Bass, yeah, as Ron puts it, she has shilled for Scientology. Video emerged, this from Politico, on Saturday. Video emerged on Friday of the California Democrat speaking at a ceremony for a renovated Scientology church in Los Angeles when she served as Speaker of the California State Assembly. The story came from the Daily Caller dug up the video, so consider the source. But in her remarks on video, Bass called on treating humans with respect and fighting oppression, but also spoke highly of the... Oh, no. Spoke highly of the controversial group and its founder, L. Ron Hubbard.
Oh, dear.
The Church of Scientology, I know, Karen Bass said, has made a difference because your creed is a universal creed and one that speaks to all people everywhere. That's why the words are exciting of your founder, L. Ron Hubbard, in the creed of the Church of Scientology, that all people of whatever race, color, or creed are created with equal rights. And thetans.
Well,
and thetans.
My problem with Scientology, it goes back to the 80s, I guess, when one of the branches of the church, one of the divisions, hooked up with 60 Minutes and decided to fuck over Warner Erhard, who back in the 70s came up with a thing called Est. And later the Forum. And, you know, I don't buy into nonsense readily, Bob, but I was invited to the Forum in about this time of 1989 and did my two weekends and an evening. And I truly, the whole purpose of it was about transformation. And I had access to transformation through that experience. Now, I can't promise that someone else is going to have, like, your mileage may vary, okay? But I found it to be a pivotal moment in you know, that prepared me in a real way for the rest of my life. And I don't proselytize about it. I don't even speak of it very often. So don't get me started on Scientology. There was even a book, 60 Minutes and the Assassination of Werner Erhard. Anybody interested in that episode would do well to order that book by a woman named James Self, S-E-L-F. And, you know, make of it what you will. But yeah, Bill, well, what were they trying to do? Paint her in, associate her with Scientology, which some people think is a lot of nonsense?
Well, yeah, and she, of course, responded by saying, not a Scientologist. I go to a Baptist church in L.A.
Good for her.
I mean,
I have issues with Baptists, but, you know.
Someday, Scott, maybe we'll advance to the point where somebody can say, you know, I'm not a Scientologist, not a Baptist, not a Catholic, not a Muslim, not a Jew, not a Hindu. I ain't none of that because I don't do religion.
And that won't
be a deal breaker or a career killer.
I don't anymore, man. You know my story on that deal. I mean, who else goes from a Roman Catholic upbringing to become a Bible-thumping Baptist? That's going from the frying pan into the goddamn fire and brimstone, you know?
Let's wrap up the evening with something from your natal state.
Wait a minute. You talking about my navel? What are you saying?
Your natal state.
Oh.
Old Virginia.
Old Virginia. They're the mother of presidents, and some are the mother. Anyway, go ahead.
In the Blue Ridge Valley is a tourist attraction called Luray Caverns.
Know it well.
And it's Luray Caverns because it's close by the little town of Luray.
Know it well.
Am I saying it right? Luray.
Luray. Yeah, Luray.
Well, little old Luray, Virginia, has a mayor. A mayor by the name of Barry Pressgraves. Which, for some reason or another, reminds me of Pressed Rat and Warthog.
But Barry Pressgraves?
Yes. And a lot of people would like for Mayor Barry Pressgraves to re-fucking zine. Because Mayor Barry Pressgraves, it turns out, is a racist. On his personal Facebook page, Mayor Barry Pressgraves of Little Luray, Virginia, posted the following. Joe Biden has just announced Aunt Jemima as his vice president pick.
Oh, dear.
Leah Pence, apparently not related to Mike and Mother. She's a member of the town council in Luray. She wrote to Mayor Barry Pressgraves and said, I am writing to strongly urge you to resign over a racist comment you made on Facebook. The comment you posted has a type of humor that has not been appropriate or funny in my lifetime or yours. It won't resolve the systemic subliminal racism that plagues our community, but your resignation is imperative. You're accountable for your words and decisions as the leader of the town of Luray, and your recent actions have caused me and many citizens to lose faith and confidence in your capacity to effectively and justly serve. Darlene sent this along, and by the way, Jude sends along a note to Darlene saying, great action. And it was. Nothing like getting active. But Darlene sent the Luray story along earlier. And noted, if only this asshole Virginia mayor would resign. But of course, you know how it's going to play, Scott. he will be declared a victim of cancel culture.
Well, no, usually, and I don't remember how big Lou Ray is, but back when I was familiar with it, it wasn't all that big.
No, it's tiny.
But, I mean, usually mayor and town council people, that's not even a paying job. They might get a stipend, but they've got a regular job besides. What is old Barry doing when he's not mayoring and putting his foot in his mouth?
I don't know. Starching his sheets and pillowcases? White ones?
Yeah.
Hey, Scott, got to get out of here, man.
All right, Bob.
All right.
Well, it is a multitude of pleasures to visit with you, and I promise to call in a little more often because I know that there are people who just, if I can take people's minds off of stuff.
Well, and, you know, we carry on. We have fun in addition to talking about, you know, zombie cicadas.
Yeah, goddamn. I was doing all right until you brought up the zombie cicadas. Jesus.
And there's, you know, there's the episode of, because everything in The Simpsons comes true. There was that episode several years ago where Homer took up the habit of licking hallucinogenic frogs.
Yeah, I remember.
And Marge asked him over the phone, "Homie, are you licking frogs?" And he responded, "I'm not licking frogs." Are you eating? Are you snorting cicadas? I'm not snorting cicadas.
Ribbit. All right, man. Take care. And the $10 will be on its way electronically in a few minutes.
All right. Thanks a bunch, Scott. Take care.
All right. See you, Bob.
Scott in San Diego. And wonderful all-over-the-place conversation. Thanks to all of you who are and have responded to the challenge at the beginning of the month. Thank you very kindly to all of you who keep the program going through your subscriptions, PayPal and Patreon, a la carte contributions, combinations of all of the above. I can never thank you enough. We have $80 that hopefully the overnight crew will take a run at to finish the challenge. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Sparky and Steve in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. This is not the second wave. This is still the first wave, and it's getting worse. Please stay home if you can. If you can't, please be super careful. Wear your masks, wear your gloves, wash your hands, don't touch your face, use your hand sanitizer. For fuck's sake, don't eat any cicadas. Maintain your social distance. And if you see somebody burbling about wearing a red hat and talking about how awesome that the cicadas are, avoid them like the plague. Because, you know, they are. Later, y'all.